Insight. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Go on, get out of here. Get out of here. She wasn't running fast enough. Well, this is WUSB in Stony Brook, and here's a public service announcement.
1 in 5 people has genital herpes. Most don't even know it, and everyone needs the facts. Call 877-411-HERPES. It's free, and it's confidential. Herpes. Spread the word, not the virus.
Give me an H.
H.
Give me an E.
E.
Give me an R.
R.
Give me a P.
P.
Give me an E.
E.
Give me an S.
S.
What do you got? What do you got?
Practically no one wants to say they've got herpes. But guess what? 1 in 5 people has herpes. 1 in 5. That's 1 of every 5 people in your building, your biology class, your favorite club. You'd never know it, because most people don't realize they have it. And everyone should know where to get the facts. Call 877-411-HERPES. What you say is confidential. What you'll learn is universal. Because anyone who's sexually active can get herpes. What do you got? I hope you got the phone number. It's free and it's confidential. It's 877-411-HERPES. Herpes. Spread the word, not the virus.
And it's just about 6 o'clock, which means it's once again time for Off the Wall. And a very very good and confusing evening to everybody out there. The program is Off the Wall. And I'm confused. I really am. You know, it's almost a predictable pattern. When I come in here, I get a phone call from somebody saying, oh, the WUSB online stream has just gone down right before your program, and that means you'll have no internet listeners. And I think it's Al-Qaeda or someone who's doing this, because every time it seems to happen at this hour. But I ran into the back, you know, and I looked at the computer like I always do, and it's always the same thing. There's never any instructions on how to fix the thing. So, you know, I didn't want to touch it. I didn't alter any programs. And now I just checked our little stream here. I can't check it before I go on the air because we're using the computer for Democracy Now. So I can't do that. I have to wait for the program to begin or run into a different room and lose track of time. But listen to this. You know, and I looked at the computer like I always do, and it's always
it's
the
me.
Same thing. There's never any instructions.
It's me talking on the internet.
So, you know, I didn't want to touch it. I didn't alter any program.
And it sounds like it's working just fine. I didn't do anything. I didn't fix anything. I don't know why it's working. It makes no sense. It makes no sense why it wouldn't work, but it makes even less sense that it's working.
But who am I to question? I don't know. I don't understand it. Maybe it's not working to the outside world. Maybe it's only working to this room. I don't know. Regardless, here we are. It's another edition of Off the Wall, the program that comes your way every Tuesday night here on WUSB in Stony Brook, New York, Long Island, USA. Apologies for last week. If you read the website, you would have noted that we were preempted for what was referred to as a last-minute soccer game. What's a last-minute soccer game? It's not where they just all get together and say, hey, let's play a game of soccer and have it broadcast over WUSB. No, it doesn't work that way. What happens occasionally is that the team here wins. I don't mean that to sound nasty, but occasionally it happens that they do win an important game in a tournament and they actually move on to the next stage. It doesn't happen all that often, all right? Let's be realistic here. It's Stony Brook, you know, not UCLA. So I wish the administrators would get that through their head, too. It's Stony Brook, not UCLA. Let's go back to education and stop building sports stadiums and things. I just wish, you know, somebody would shake them and get that through their heads. Educational institution, not for fraternities and sports. Yeah, you can do that, but that's, you know, in your free time. Devote all your regular time to studying and working at the radio station, like I did. That's what's important. Anyway, getting back to the last-minute soccer game. So, yeah, they won, and everybody was very excited. They were going to play another game, and which I believe they eventually lost. The point being, that game was scheduled for last Tuesday at 6 p.m. Yeah, part of the plot to keep me off the air. So, guess what happened? Then this is something that I never heard of. The soccer game was rained out. Yeah, you know, I don't know a whole lot about sports, but I do know that soccer is one of these games where you play it in any weather conditions imaginable. Blizzards, hurricanes, earthquakes, if that's a weather condition. The game never stops. It's sort of like American football. A game I don't know why it's called football, because you kick the ball once, but let's not even get into that. They wear heavy helmets and big uniforms in that game, so it makes sense that they can stay out in any weather. I don't quite understand why it works that way in soccer. It also seems to work that way in rugby. Then you got a game like baseball, where they're just looking for any excuse not to play. Oh, it's cloudy. The sun's too bright. Someone took my picture. You know, anything that will force a postponement, they go for it. But soccer is not one of those games. I know, I've seen games all over the world on my television. I haven't traveled to see them. And they're always playing. There was one exception, and that even happened last week in England, when it was too foggy. And that makes sense, you know? If it's too foggy, you can't see the ball. The referee can't see the players, and the fans can't see the game. So, yeah, you know, heavy fog, okay, I can see that. I can see that. And any condition where perhaps there's bullets in the air, that's also a reason to postpone a soccer game. But rain? No. Rain is not one of them. I'm sorry. I know people who go out to peewee soccer games, you know, with little kids, and they play in any weather. So why Stony Brook couldn't do that, or maybe it was the other team that didn't want to play, I don't know. But I'm sorry, because it turned out that we could have been on the air last week. We were uncancelled. But I didn't find out about it until it was far too late to do something about it. So anyway, this week we are not preempted, but we may not be on the internet. Every week it's a new challenge. But you know, I don't want to leave it where I'm chastising the Stony Brook sports program, because they do deserve a whole lot of credit. You know, it's not an easy thing to do, and especially what these guys do. I mean, the team. What's the team? The Seahawks? The Seawolves? Seawolves. Okay. The fictitious animal, right? There's no such thing as a seawolf. If there is, I'd like to know what it looks like. They're, you know, we criticize them a lot. We make fun of them a lot. Especially when they lose by 2-1 margins. But, you know, I did a little research before I came over here. And folks, you know, that's the secret, all right? If you want to appear intelligent to the people you're talking to, take a minute or two out of the day, do a little research, and you know, you'll score major points, okay? Because you'll know something about what you talk about. If, for instance, I just happened to pick up today that Thimphu is the capital of Bhutan. I don't know what I'm going to do with that information, but I'm going to use it in a conversation someplace and be seen as more intelligent as a result. It's all like sort of a building block process.
So anyway, I looked into the Seawolves. And, you know, these guys, okay, you know, maybe they didn't want to play soccer. But the reason might have been because they were too tired from playing basketball. Yeah, that's right. They play basketball, too. In fact, I looked it up, and the Stony Brook Seawolves even play football and baseball. Now, you know, we know that the, you know, it's a difference between the New York Giants and the New York Mets. And the New York, you know, Rangers and the New York Knicks. They're all different teams. But here, at this campus, it's all one team, the Stony Brook Seawolves. We've put a major job, I guess, or just task on these people's conscience, where they have to play all the games. No wonder they do terribly in school. They constantly have to play a different sport. I think it's unfair. I think it's unfair to put so much pressure on the athletic department. Why not have different teams? Maybe, I know this is a radical thought, but might not have a different team for soccer, a different team for football, a different team for basketball. You know, not just make the poor Seawolves do it all. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that. It's the last Tuesday of November. And winter is at our throats. Thanksgiving has just passed us by. And it was a bit of fun this year, you know, get into the usual arguments with the relatives about the, you know, the war and politics and things like that. I got to talk about traveling around the world and suffering a mini stroke, which I don't think I really suffered, and all sorts of other things. And that's really what it's all about, you know, it's about communicating, talking, arguing, interacting, and driving a smart car around and having everybody wave at you. that's what it's really all about. If you get the chance to do that, that'll improve your holiday 100%. What shall we get into first? There's a whole lot, because there's a lot we didn't get into last week, because we weren't on. Missed the whole Murpha thing, calling for the immediate return, or... I'm confused. Was he calling for the immediate return of troops or the immediate beginning of returning of troops? I'm not really sure. The Republicans sure took that and ran with it and behaved like children. Well, no, it's an insult to children, isn't it? It was incredible. I actually watched C-SPAN. I don't do that very often. And saw how they were bringing to a vote something that nobody wanted. Just to prove some point and waste everybody's time. This guy calls for the troops to come home. Oh, well, then let's vote on getting the troops home right now. Let's have a vote on surrendering, on caving into terrorism. Yes, let's do that. And they actually made everybody go through this. Everybody had to give talks and speeches, and of course, in the end, it lost overwhelmingly. There were a couple of people who voted for it. I'd like to know who they were. But it was a tremendous waste of time, and contentious, too. But, you know, in a way, it brought to the floor something that needs to be discussed. It would be nice if it was discussed under relatively realistic terms, where we talk about just what in God's name are we doing there, when are we going to be coming back, and what should we do to the people who forced us to go over there under false pretenses. I mean, I don't understand why we're so patient. I look at the polls for whatever they're worth. I talk to lots of people. I talk to Republicans. I talk to conservatives. I talk to people on the far right. And nobody's happy with this. Everybody thinks it's a big waste of time. So, you know, I think we can all kind of unite and say, wow, you know, this was monumentally bad. Everything that the anti-war people were saying at the very beginning turned out to be true. How can that possibly be the case? How could these guys have had more common sense than the leaders? And clearly the leaders knew more. And I lump everybody in as leaders, Democrats, Republicans, you name it. They are all guilty in this. And everybody who voted for more of this, I also lump in. Because the writing was certainly on the wall a year ago. Anyway, they were at it again today, Bush and Rumsfeld. Bush said today it would be a terrible mistake to pull U.S. forces out of Iraq, and that politics should not play any part in a decision about withdrawal. We will make decisions about troops levels. That's what he said? Did they just mistype this, or did he really say that? We will make decisions about troops levels based upon the capability of the Iraqis to take the fight to the enemy. I will make decisions on the level of troops based upon the recommendations of commanders on the ground. And then Rumsfeld, later today, said that quitting the war would allow insurgents to prevail and put the United States at still greater risk. Quitting is not an exit strategy. You know, where do you begin with someone like this? What is an exit strategy? I mean, leaving, yeah, it is going to imply defeat. Because you know what? They are winning. What have we gained over there? What have we actually gained? Well, let's see. Rumsfeld even gave a little list of things that we've gained since going over there. U.S. forces have turned over control of about 29 military bases to the Iraqis. Well, that's nice. How many are there left? And just what's going on at those military bases in the first place? We hear about Iraqis torturing other Iraqis. Well, our hands are clean. We've got nothing to do with that. But these are the guys that we're training. So, you know, when things like this are happening, I don't know if I can count that as a success. Yeah, we're turning things over, but what are we turning them into? Seems like we're just changing the names of the regime, and we still have people torturing and abusing power. Maybe they're not Sunnis, maybe now they're Shiites. I don't quite know what the advantage is, since Iran is mostly Shiite, and they are simply going to have more influence. And we have al-Qaeda running all over Iraq now. One thing you have to say about Saddam Hussein, there was no al-Qaeda in Iraq when he was in power, because he didn't like that kind of thing. And he kept a very tight grip. Now, there's a lot of bad in keeping a tight grip, but there is an advantage or two. Well, that's gone. Al-Qaeda is all over the place, and I don't see how you're ever going to put the genie back in the bottle. Anyway, another advantage that Rumsfeld came up with, Baghdad's once violent Haifa Street is now more peaceful and under the control of an Iraqi army battalion. This is the best we can do? One street? One street? That we've made one street more peaceful. You know what? They've probably moved over to West Haifa Street, you know, or some other street, or all the streets. It sure seems like there's a lot of violence. But okay, if the Iraqi army battalion is lined up on that one particular street, then I guess maybe that's a safe passage if it goes anywhere. Oh boy, what else? The Iraqi army has 7 division and 31 brigade headquarters in operation, compared with none in July 2004. Okay, again, these are meaningless numbers. How does that translate to anything of consequence? Yeah, you're creating more bureaucracy, more soldiers in various places. But are they trained? Are they able to defend themselves? Are they just sitting targets? And finally, the number of Iraq army battalions, quote, in the fight, unquote, has grown to 95 compared to 5 in August 2004. Again, more numbers, but you know, what that tells me is that the fight has gotten a lot bigger. A lot more fighting going on. And what exactly are they fighting about? You know, no one seems to be asking that question anymore. Supposedly the United States went in there to get rid of Saddam Hussein because he had weapons of mass destruction. Well, okay, we got rid of Saddam Hussein and there were no weapons of mass destruction. Now what? Now we just have this major battle that's going on continuously without any end in sight. But what is it a battle for? Why is that never asked? These quote-unquote insurgents, what do they want? Is it true that all they want is to get the United States out of there? Well, then what's wrong with that? If we leave, well, there'll be a bloodbath. Well, guess what? There's a bloodbath right now. And it's our fault. And it will be our fault when we leave, but There's no real choice, is there? Because we don't have the upper hand, and I don't see us ever getting the upper hand. It's just really sad. And, you know, I love the argument. If we leave now, then those 2,000 people who, 2,000 soldiers of ours who died will have died in vain. Do you know what they said last year? They said, if we leave, those 1,000 soldiers who died will have died in vain. Do you know what they'll say next year? I think you get the idea. At what point can you say, you know what, it was a mistake? Let's get the hell out of there. And this is something that I think the American people definitely have an obligation to follow through on. I hear anti-war protests have dwindled in number. For God's sake, why? Have we really given up that easily? If anything, this should be the time when people are mobilizing more than ever before. I guarantee you this. A relatively small number of people. We had 1 million people, I think, march in New York prior to the war. If not 1 million, it was very close to that. Let's take a very small number. Let's take 10,000 people. Sounds like a lot of people, but it's really not that much. If 10,000 people show up to a Yankees game, it's a disaster. Okay, it's not that much. So we get 10,000 people, plant them in Washington, D.C., in some strategic place, maybe surrounding the White House, if they don't get mowed down by machine gun fire. I don't know if that's even legal anymore to stand outside the White House. Okay, fine, then you put them someplace where they're visible and loud, and they don't leave. Or if they do leave, they're replaced by somebody else. And you stay there. You stay there until something changes. That's called pressure. That's called getting on the news. Now, you notice how when something happens, when someone's comments are called into question, there's a reaction. This whole Murphy situation when the Republicans were seen as criticizing a congressman who was seen as a war hero because he dared to suggest that troops should come home. Some Republicans jumped on him and even implied that he was taking a cowardly position, which got people very angry. And then the next day, Dick Cheney is out there saying what a good friend he is and how they simply just disagree. Completely different tone than he had taken, I think, only one day before. This is because of pressure. This is because of public reaction. So when the people react, when something is forced to be an issue, there's very little choice but to say something, to do something. Same thing with Bush saying, oh, by the way, we don't believe in torture. After remaining relatively quiet on that subject throughout the many months where it's pretty obvious that we do endorse torture in various parts of the world. But, you know, voices were raised and he came out and, well, yeah, he lied, but he was forced to say something. Why do you think that is? They do feel the pressure. So for the U.S. public to back down on the anti-war movement at this stage, it's like giving them a blank check. See where they go next. You know, I wish it was the way it was to our north, our neighbors in the north, or really in very many parts of the world. The Canadian government was toppled yesterday. That's right. That's what the headlines say. After months of political instability, the government of Canadian Prime Minister Paul Martin fell on Monday when three opposition parties united to topple him with a no-confidence vote in the House of Commons. Boy, wouldn't it be great to have a no-confidence vote in George W. Bush and to have his government topple? We can't do that. The way our system is set up, we have to wait. We have to wait another few years till 2008. Oh, my God. And only after a multi-million-dollar, or is it billion-dollar, campaign where only the richest people can participate and be elected. And in the end, we get to choose between two people. It doesn't work that way in other parts of the world.
You get to choose between a lot of people. Coalition governments are formed, and when they mess up, and the way Paul Martin's government messed up was really minor compared to what's happening here. Just, you know, your usual corruption scandal type of a thing. Not even worth mentioning. But when that kind of thing happens, you just got to unite and vote the bastards down. And then they're forced. They're forced to hold elections. And I think what the election in Canada is going to be on, what, January 23rd or something? You know, you don't have a whole lot of time to create candidates. People like Karl Rove don't really have much to do because it's all about the issues. So, yeah, that would be cool. That would be really cool. But, you know, there's other ways. There's other ways to apply the pressure. Maybe one day we can change our system. Although, you know, people are always so loath to change anything. And I think that's a real problem in this country, that we just stay the same all the time. Well, okay, other bits of news. We got more responses than I think anything we've ever done in this program, which I don't know if that's good or bad. But it really was impressive. It really was impressive. And, you know, most of the responses were from Canada, too. Yeah, I didn't realize we had so many Canadian listeners. But that's good to know. We played a piece 2 weeks ago, a mystery piece. I had no idea what it was. I guess if I had just done a little bit of research, I could have found it, because so many people did that research and were able to track it down. It was a piece where this guy was trying to reach... he was trying to find phone numbers for city zoos all over the United States and Canada. There were two pieces running consecutively, one in the left speaker, one in the right speaker. I separated them and played them each one after the other because most of our listeners listen in mono, and it would have been very difficult to isolate the sound. So I asked for people to write in and tell us what the factual blunder was that was heard in those phone calls. And a lot of people got it. A lot of people got other things, too. They found different factual blunders. But the one that I was looking for, and the first person to write in, were the following. The capital of British Columbia is Victoria. It had been mistakenly referred to by both the caller and the operator as Vancouver. And it's Victoria. And that was submitted by Dr. Noah Littlepeep. I don't know if that's a real name, but it's a name nonetheless. And yes, thank you. You were the first one. Other people wrote in with that answer, but with other information, too. Perhaps the most exciting came from Al in Montreal. The audio you played has been re-released on CD. It's on the Other Minds label. And the title is Border Dissolve in Audio Space. It was released in 1970. The artist is Liam O'Gallagher. And according to these notes, the original version on LP was only the second album in a series of about 50, released early 1975 on the now defunct 1750 Arch Records label, founded by Thomas Buckner in Berkeley, California. You can get the MP3 of the CD at www.ubu.com/sound/10plus2.html. Well, I got mine on Amazon. I already ordered it. Although it says, you know, I don't know why, usually ships within 4 to 5 weeks. Boy, I sure know how to pick them, don't I? Sound poems or text sound compositions represent a cross-fertilization of the traditional arts of music and poetry, originally released in 1974. This CD re-release is the first to anthologize text sound pieces by U.S. composers, poets, and visual artists. The advent of the magnetic tape recorder and other various electronic devices from 1950 to 1955 presented artists of various disciplines with a wider possibility of altering natural sound, including the speaking voice. Anyway, we were able to download the rest of that piece, and what I'd like to do now is present it in two parts once more. It runs about 5.5 minutes each. Thanks to our listeners, some more of Liam O'Gallagher's Now, what's the name of it again? According to this, it's American Tech Sound Pieces. That's the title on Amazon. You know, I lost the piece. I just had it in my hand a second ago. Oh, yes, Border Dissolve in Audio Space. That's the official name. Let's listen to the left channel first. You'll hear some of this again in the right channel, but you'll hear different things, too. This is going to start with one of my favorite rings of all time, which I think comes from an old step office. And again, you can write to us with your comments and contributions, otw@2600.com. Now, let's go back into time.
Yes, operator, could you give me the area code and information for Quebec?
Quebec. Oh, let's check that, sir, just a moment.
Thank you. Thank you, operator.
You're welcome, sir.
Would you connect me?
I'm sorry, sir. I can't do that. I can't call out.
Very well. I'll call. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What do you want?
I want the number of the local zoo.
Local zoo?
Yes.
We don't have a zoo in Louisiana.
Not in the capital?
No,
there's
a zoo in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
What's the name of that place?
Moose Jaw.
Is this Quebec?
Operator?
Yes.
Operator, this is the North American Border Dissolve, and I'm calling for the telephone of the city zoo.
Oh, just a moment.
Yes, operator.
2310 693 2310.
What time is it there, operator? Is the zoo open?
It's 20 minutes to 9. Yes.
Yeah, thank you, operator.
Helena, Montana.
I see. Thank you, operator. Did you say
Helena? Right.
It's 406.
Thank you, operator.
Operator, can I get the area code for Ontario?
Information for what city?
Seattle. Yes, the city zoo.
In Seattle?
Yes.
All right, one moment.
Ontario, California?
No, Canada.
What's a city in Ontario?
That's the capital.
What's the name of the city? Ontario?
Winnipeg, operator.
Oh, you never did say Winnipeg.
Pardon?
Winnipeg.
One moment.
Never mind, operator.
All right. Would you hold the line for a moment?
Ontario.
Yes.
Oh, wait a minute. I have the Woodland Park Warehouse, or I have the zoo at Woodland Park.
Thank you, operator.
The zoo at Woodland Park.
See, I'm going to get Buffalo, New York. You're going to get Toronto.
Get Toronto.
Good evening. Directory assistance for what, please?
Is this for Calgary?
This is Calgary.
Calgary.
Yes, Calgary. This is United States calling. This is the...
I can barely hear you, sir.
Operator, this is a call from the United States. Do you have a zoo there? Can you give me a telephone number for the local zoo?
Yes, certainly.
Thank you.
The number's 265. 5772.
What time is it there, operator? Is the zoo open?
I don't think so. No, it's 10 minutes to 7.
All right, thank you, operator.
You're welcome.
Time is 5:39. Yes, operator, would you give me the area code and information for Tijuana, Mexico? Thank you, operator.
You're welcome.
Okay, you know, it ends kind of suddenly, so I'm not sure if there's even more of this piece. There might be. Who knows? I'm sure they have all kinds of tapes lying around, but as far as what was actually released on the album, which was called 10 plus 2... :12 American Tech Sound Pieces. The piece itself is called Border Dissolve in Audio Space, and it was done by Liam O'Gallagher. You can find it on the Other Minds label, and it's been re-released on Amazon. We just heard the left channel. We're going to play the right channel in a moment. And to some of you, it might sound exactly the same, but if you listen carefully, you'll hear all kinds of different phone sounds, different connections that are going on. And listening to the right channel, you realize that there are actually two people doing this. It's not one person per channel. It's basically two people on two different channels working together to put together this piece, I guess. It's really pretty fascinating. If you know of any other pieces out there that have old recordings from phone systems, I think there's a great interest in that. We'd sure like to find out about it here at this radio program because, well, thank God people record this kind of stuff. You know, imagine if you just had to describe things to people based on memory. Listen to how different the phone system used to sound when people used rotary phones, when there were crossbar switches, when rings sounded different, when it took time to actually connect a phone call, when you could hear the hiss of a long-distance line. And here's a listener who brought up some other differences. I'm guessing one of your listeners beat me to it, but I believe the factual error is that when Vancouver was named the capital, it is Victoria. Okay. I love the show, enjoyed the old sounds of telephone days gone by. I found it rather charming when the operators would call the guy sir. Not that I'm big on formalities, but it was nice to hear strangers being polite. It was like listening to an old movie. Signed, Keith. Well, yeah, you know, Keith, it's very true. Things change over the years, and people treat each other differently. And just the way that operators used to talk, the way that they were immediately available, that certainly has changed. And it's good to have the evidence to point to show how it used to be. Here's a letter from Matt in Ohio. I enjoyed the recording you played on the show 2 weeks ago. It was very interesting to say the least. I listened to it in my car and my iPod. The recording you played was... sort of strange to listen to in the car. Somehow weird things were happening with my car stereo, probably because of the subwoofers. It sounded a lot different than it does on my headphones. I've noticed that even today, the dial tone I hear on off the wall sounds a little different than what I hear on SBC's switches in Ohio. Can we bring up a dial tone? Wouldn't be violating FCC rules. Okay, that's what our dial tone sounds like. I'll shut up for a second. And to me, that sounds the same as dial tones everywhere, but there is a subtle difference because this is coming off a digital switch and it's the university, and it sounds different. That's very hard to describe how. When I pick up my home phone, it sounds similar, but different in some way. But of course, back in the old days, wow, things really sounded different. Anyway, Matt theorizes maybe it's just the compression, but it does sound different. Have you ever considered providing a higher bandwidth file, at the very least for the latest show? Even if you provided it over BitTorrent, I'd enjoy the show along with Off the Hook more if it was at a higher bitrate / sampling rate. Well, Matt, that's a very good question, and we are looking into doing things like that. It's just a question, really, of bandwidth. We have so many people downloading the shows that if we were to provide something that was so much bigger than what we have right now, and it really is so much bigger when you make it regular broadcast quality, we would be crippled as far as number of people accessing at one time. But we are looking into it, and hopefully it'll become more feasible over time. What we have done, though, and this might interest you, just yesterday we released the first of a series of Off the Hook DVDs that are at full broadcast quality. Now, what we've done in the past, we've basically taken what's available on the internet, which I believe is at the rate of 16 kbps and 16 kilohertz, is that right? And we've basically given the regular off-the-tape or off-the-CD version of 128 kbps, 44 kilohertz. I hope I'm getting those numbers right. What that means to the uninitiated, or people just have more time to think about other things, is that you can hear Off the Hook the way it sounded over the radio, not the way it sounds over the internet. I'd play it for you now, except what would be the point if you're listening over the internet? It's still going to sound like it's over the internet. But if you want more information on that, go to our webpage, www.2600.com, and there'll be a story about Off the Hook in high-quality audio. And what we're doing is we're releasing 1 year per month, so that we'll eventually get all caught up. By this time next year, I think everything should be out. And if we get a good response to this, we can do it for the other shows as well. But again, we can't offer it online yet. If you want to offer it online, feel free. Take the DVD and go crazy. But we just don't have the means right now. But it's great that we can preserve things. We can preserve history in this way. And listen to it the way it actually sounded. Okay, let's get back to listening to this the way it actually sounded. This is now the right channel of the piece we just heard. There are differences, big differences. There's different things going on, but you will hear some of what you heard before at a much lower volume, and you'll hear some of what you couldn't hear before at a much higher volume. And we'll be back in about 5.5 minutes.
Just a moment. Yes, 306 is the area code. I'll connect you with information.
Thank you, operator.
Hello, information. Hello. Hello. Is there somebody on the line?
Hello.
Did you want a number, sir?
Yes, I'm waiting for information for Saskatchewan.
This is information.
Oh, this is information. Can you give me some information about the number to call there?
Oh, is it Regina you want?
Pardon?
What town did you want?
Regina.
And whose number do you want?
I wanted the number of the local zoo.
Local zoo?
Yes.
We don't have a zoo in Regina.
Not in the capital?
No, I'm sorry, we don't, sir. There's a zoo in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
What's the name of that place?
Moose Jaw. M-O-O-S-E and then Jaw, J-A-W.
All right, thank you, operator.
You're welcome. Get her back on, sir.
Is this Quebec?
Operator?
Yeah. Operator,
is this information?
Border dissolve, and I'm calling
operator?
The telephone of the city zoo.
Good afternoon, may I help you?
Yes,
could you give me the area code number for Montana?
What time is it there, operator? Is the zoo open?
Canada?
No, Montana. It's on the border between...
What place is it in Montana, sir?
Helena, Montana.
All right, you have to give the city and state, sir.
I see. Thank you, operator.
Did you say Helena?
Right.
Okay. It's 406.
Thank you, operator.
You're welcome.
Director assistance.
Operator, can I get the area code for Ontario?
Yes, sir.
Information?
Yes, just a moment, sir.
Thank you.
Canada, huh?
Yes.
I babysit.
Ontario, California?
No, Canada.
Canada? What city in Ontario?
That's the capital.
What's the name of the city? Ontario?
Winnipeg, operator.
Oh, you never did say Winnipeg.
Pardon?
Winnipeg. Well, I have it here. Never mind, operator.
All right.
Where?
Ontario.
Oh, no, you've reached Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Are you code 204, sir?
204. Thank you, operator.
You're welcome.
You see, I'm going to get Buffalo, New York, and you're going to get Toronto.
Get Toronto, it's across the bay.
Yeah, in other words, we'll go by the cities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you,
I'm just doing Buffalo.
And then,
could be more Buffalo.
Is this for Calgary?
This is Calgary.
Yes, Calgary, this is the United States calling. This is the, operator, this is the call from the United States. Do you have a zoo there? Can you give me a telephone number for the local zoo?
Yes, certainly. Thank you. Number
265-575-7772. What time is it there, operator? Is the zoo open?
Yeah. I don't think so. No, it's
10 minutes.
Well,
thank you, operator. Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal.
Thank you, operator.
Thank you. Thank you. Operator, would you give me the area code and information for Tijuana, Mexico?
And there we have it. I think we've heard all of that piece now. So again, that thanks to our listeners for giving us information so that we could hear the rest of it. We played the first part of that 2 weeks ago. And again, Liam O'Gallagher is the artist there. It was done in 1970, I believe. Border Dissolve in Audio Space from a record called 10+2:12 American Tech Sound Pieces. Okay, that's off the wall. Again, you can write to us, otw@2600.com. A couple of last bits of information from listeners, actually, who inform us that Hurricane Gamma indeed was in existence last week. I was fantasizing about being hit by Hurricane Gamma because it's just such a crazy name. And in fact, we actually made it all the way up to Gamma. So it didn't hit us, though, unfortunately. And in fact, I was just listening to the radio on the way over here, and do you know there's a tropical storm Epsilon? It just formed today. Today is November 29th. The hurricane season ends on November 30th.
How does that work exactly? What happens if a storm forms 2 days from now? It doesn't qualify? What is it then? What is it if it's not a tropical storm, yet it's there? So anyway, we've had Alpha, we've had Beta, we've had Gamma, we've had Delta, we've had Epsilon. Unreal. Unreal. Crazy weather always intrigues me. The more the better. Not, for people who aren't prepared for it, obviously. It sort of points out our weak points, but you can't blame nature for that. Okay, other news of the world. This just came out today. The Vatican has defended a policy statement designed to keep men with deep-seated homosexual tendencies from becoming priests, but said there'd be no crackdown on gays who are already ordained. The Vatican document, which happens to be the first major policy statement of ex-Nazi Pope Benedict XVI, he is an ex-Nazi. And we can get into that some other time. Was officially released on Tuesday after being leaked earlier. Conservatives have said it may help reverse the gay culture of many U.S. seminaries, while liberal critics complain the restrictions will create morale problems among clergy and lead to an even greater priest shortage in the United States. The Reverend James Martin, a U.S. Jesuit who has written on the issue, said American theologians, canon lawyers, and other Roman Catholics will hope that the document won't really mean what it says. But he believes it's clear the Vatican wants to keep gay men from being ordained, even if they're committed to celibacy. And he predicts a slow, silent attrition among celibate gay men who cannot accept the idea of staying in an organization that condemns their existence in the priesthood. I can't figure out why people continue to stay in a religion that treats them so badly. I can never understand that. You know, if this is what the religion stands for, and if this is what the majority is going to say and the people in charge, this is where you break away and you start something different. You form, one of these schisms that will last for centuries, millennia, start wars in the future, that kind of thing. This is the time to do it. It really is. The document has been in the works for years, but its existence came to light in 2002 at the height of the clergy sex abuse scandal in the United States. A study commissioned by U.S. bishops found most abuse victims since 1950 were adolescent boys. I think one of the reasons for that is because there aren't really adolescent girls in the church. When you walk around inside a church, the people doing whatever they do back there are invariably adolescent boys and not girls. I don't know why that is. That's a church thing. Experts on sex offenders say homosexuals are no more likely than heterosexuals to molest young people, but that did not stifle questions about gay seminarians. The instructions said men who practice homosexuality, present deep-seated homosexual tendencies, or support the so-called gay culture, whatever that means, cannot be admitted to seminaries. The only exception, this is interesting, would be for those with a transitory problem that had been overcome for at least 3 years. Now, according to Cardinal Zenon Groszelewski, in something broadcast on Vatican Radio, this is how it works. These are the rules. Okay? During an adolescence not yet completed, some curiosity is permitted. This is how you can, practice gay things and get away with it and still be in the church. Some curiosity during an adolescence not yet completed. Or, under accidental circumstances, when drunk. Yes, as long as you drink first, it's perfectly okay. Or other particular conditions, such as a person who has been in prison for many years. In these cases, the possible homosexual acts do not come from a deeply seated tendency, but are determined by the circumstances. Or, these acts are made to please someone and obtain advantages. I guess all prostitutes are okay, too. these acts in such cases do not originate from a deeply seated tendency, but from other transitory circumstances, and these cases are not an obstacle to the admission to the seminary or to holy order. In this case, though, they have to end at least 3 years before the diaconal ordainment. I don't think I've ever used that word before in my life. But that shows you what kind of thought they're putting into this. They have all their rules and restrictions all laid out for you. Unbelievable. This is the week also that the United States is going to carry out its 1,000th execution since the reintroduction of the death penalty back in 1976. 1,000! I wonder if the guy who gets executed gets anything special for that. You know? I mean, come on. It's going to be gloomy enough. It's a schedule for Wednesday, tomorrow in Virginia. A man convicted of fatally stabbing a pool hall manager with a pair of scissors. I know, they always have to say what the guy did so that you feel this, you know, two-minute hatred towards the person. You say, yeah, he's getting what he deserves. Forgetting the whole point that it's our government killing people in our country as some sort of revenge, you know? I don't necessarily think revenge is a bad thing. I just don't know if it's a good thing in the hands of the government. And killing, I think, is... I don't think it's any... It's certainly not... it's not rehabilitation, is it? Yeah, they'll never do it again, but they're not going to be improved from being dead. Well, I guess some people would argue that, too. It's not a good thing. It's not a good thing when you have to execute so many people. And I think, you know, having this many executed sort of shows that it's not a deterrent either. And then you have what's going on in Singapore. Oh, my God, have you heard about this story? This is horrible. Time's running out for 25-year-old Australian drug trafficker. I don't know if it's fair to even call him a drug trafficker. He was smuggling drugs. I guess he is, but, you know, not like somebody who did it a lot. I think that might have been his first time. He was smuggling drugs to help his twin brother pay some debts or something like that. And he was bringing them from Cambodia to Australia. He was caught in Singapore. Now, wouldn't the people... You know, that should be interested in this be the Australians, because that's where the drugs were headed for. Or maybe Cambodia, because it's their drugs. But no, Singapore caught him somehow. Note to self, never fly through Singapore. Okay, because apparently they stop you and look for things and get very mad if they find them. Anyway, he's scheduled to be executed at Singapore's Changi prison on Friday, and they execute people by hanging there. I mean, I guess lethal injection is no less barbaric, but somehow it just, it seems that way. You know, when you think of a gallows, it just seems like something from the 1800s. Anyway, his death sentence has sparked widespread criticism in Australia. The Canberra government has repeatedly pleaded for clemency, as have lawyers, trade unions, and church groups. And add a New York-based talk show host to that list now, too. This is insane. You know, murder is one thing. Transporting drugs, that's something completely different. No, it's not right, but death? My God. Singapore remains unmoved, insists the hanging will go ahead as planned, and anybody who knows Singapore knows that's exactly what they're going to do. This guy was arrested carrying 400 grams of heroin at Singapore's Changi Airport. Oh, same name as the prison. I wonder if they're connected. This happened in late 2002. He was trying to, he was smuggling them to pay off his twin brother's debts. Simon Rice, a lecturer at Macquart University in Sydney, said that Singapore was not a signatory to international human rights covenants. There was little hope the 25-year-old drug trafficker would be saved. Well, it's pretty sad that we live in the kind of world where these things are the norm. But unfortunately, that kind of thing happens a lot, here and abroad. Well, we are out of time. And it being the week after Thanksgiving, I couldn't think of a more appropriate song to play than this classic from John Lennon. Temperature's rising. Fever is high. Well, not this part so much. Can't see no future. But certainly the refrain. Can't see no sky. My feet are so heavy. It's coming. Don't worry, it's coming. And you'll know when you get there. It'll be really cool. I wish I was a baby. Here it comes, here it comes. I wish you was dead. No, it's not that. Oh, Turkey. There you go. Has got me on run. Enjoy the cold turkey. We'll see you again in a week. Have a good night.